And the AARP is in the phone directory. They're in Manhattan, and I understand there's a Brooklyn chapter. I haven't looked into them either. Then a third thing that I think would be helpful to your listeners is to point out there are some information sources. And one of them is the booklet, Call for Action, a Survival Kit for New Yorkers. And it's published by WMCA. Maybe I shouldn't advertise them on the phone, but the new revised edition, so-called, is available.
You can say it. Oh, okay. I think you can say anything but the price.
Yeah. And then there also are some other publications, and of course there's quite a legislative program pending with some of these groups, which maybe some of the listeners would want to be active in.
I think the people to call on that is the Gray Panthers. And let me repeat that phone number. That's 877-8334.
Okay, goodbye.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. I wanted to get back more to some of the things that we were talking about the things that you felt were particularly relevant to your life as a woman when you were talking about those years that were the best years and what was good about them.
Well, let's see if I can sum it up. Or for one thing, a large part of my life, of course, was spent in being a mother. And from the time I was a little kid, I always wanted to have four children. And I was very
and
lucky.
You did.
Yes, I did. That's one of the things I did. So that I spent a lot of time, I shouldn't say raising my children, helping them grow, I think would be a better word. I don't like the concept of, of being a motive force. I would rather think of parents as facilitators, just as I think of teachers as facilitators. People who help children to grow, to become productive. I won't even use the word good. I don't like words with moral significance. I would rather use productive. I think that's a healthier word. And I think that's the function of parents. In a sense, it's the function of teachers, too. And I enjoyed most of my parenting. There were problems, of course. There always are, particularly with adolescent kids. That was probably the hardest. And to this day, I can't work as well, I don't think, with adolescents as I can with younger children. But that was a very important part of my life. And, romance, love, sex, that was important too. It was very important. And I think actually that's a cultural thing. I can't remember not thinking that it was important to be liked by men. And in fact, that's why I started to smoke when I was 15 and a half, because I had a friend who, the boys really went for her, and she smoked, and I figured that was one of the things that did it. So I started to smoke, and I'm smoking to this day, much to my sorrow. And as luck would have it, something did happen around that time. Of course, it was probably biological, not cigarettes, but I was sure it was the cigarettes. So those were important things in my life, friendships, learning, all the arts, all the things that I always liked. Whatever not everything I did, but I like to enjoy what I do, and I've been rather successful at that. I've always enjoyed when I worked. I wanted to do the best I could at whatever I was doing, even if it was typing envelopes. I wanted them to come out right, and it wasn't because I was lost, but I think that in life altogether, it's very important for your own development to do whatever you do as best you can. If it's cooking, you should cook well. Not because your husband's going to say that's a good dinner, but because it's good to do things with complete involvement. And for your own development, for your own sake, for your own growth, if you read, you should enjoy reading. If you go for a walk, you should look out and see whatever you can see. I remember taking groups of kids out for walks when I was a teacher and pointing out all the things you could see, the difference in colors of the leaves, the different heights of buildings, all the things you can see on a New York street or wherever you are. It's so important to be aware of whatever you are at or what you're doing, because that heightens the enjoyment of life, and I think you should do everything like that.
I have to say that on the one hand, we could say that you're here, in fact, sharing your wisdom that you've acquired, except that I know that these are things that you always knew because you taught them to me. I know we weren't going to lean too heavy on the fact that we were mother and daughter here, even though this is Mother's Day coming up. But it's real exciting for me to hear on the radio some of the things that I live by coming out of your mouth and knowing that I got them from you, you know, and that in fact I've tried to communicate to my kids too. Maybe next time we do this we should have the little kids on with us too, and we can have
that would be fun.
A different kind of program. This is, I have to say here, this is a change in subject, that when I looked for music for this program, there was not very much. And I found things that I could find that were relevant or barely relevant or semi-relevant. And we were going to be talking about women's lives, and I found this Hazel and Alice record that I like, and I can't think of a less appropriate, in a sense, thing right now, because it's the other side, I guess, of what we've been talking about. It's the side of women's lives who didn't get the chance to come to that sense of enjoyment that you and I have, and that, frankly, I've known a lot of women who didn't have it, who didn't get to get it. Mm-hmm. And I've always felt real grateful to you that I got it from you. In any case, I did want to play this. This is Hazel and Alice singing Custom Made Woman Blues is what it is.
Well, I tried to be the kind of woman you wanted me to be. Not your fault that I tried to be what I thought you wanted to see. Smile and face, shining hair, clothes that I thought you'd like me to wear. Made to please and not to tease, it's the custom-made woman blues. I tried to be the kind of woman you wanted me to be, and I tried to see life your way and say all the things you'd like me to say. Loving thoughts, gentle hands, all guaranteed to keep a hold of your man. Made to please and not to tease, it's the custom-made woman blues. Oh, please. tired of me and all of those things I thought you wanted me to be. Is it true you want someone who knows how to think and do on her own? Lord, it's hard to realize the lessons I learned so young were nothing but lies. Made to please and not to tease, it's the custom-made woman blues. Made to please and not to tease, it's the custom-made woman blues.
That was Hazel Dickens and Alice Gerard singing custom-made woman blues from their record, Hazel and Alice, which is their next to the most recent record. I guess I wanted to talk about, if you don't mind, your mother a little bit, because I wanted to try and get back some sense of what it is that makes you different, that makes you feeling like the thing you have to do with your life is make every day feel good. And every day done well, when I know that a lot of women are still stuck in some real different place where they can't even relate, in a sense, to where they're relating more to that song, Custom Made Woman Blues.
Well, I think that this feeling of making every day count, I really got probably more from my father, but my mother was an early feminist, and I remember your sister once writing an article when she lived out of town saying that she learned feminism at her mother's knee. Well, I learned it at my mother's knee. My mother was a proud woman, and I wouldn't say she was secure in being a woman, because she was, you know, really a Victorian or Edwardian woman, and mostly she felt anger, I think, at being a woman and being in a woman's position. But she had very strong feelings, which she communicated to me, about the worth of being a woman. And I think, I remember, for instance, an incident when I was 14 years old with this dear friend whom I mentioned recently, a man. He paid my car fare coming back from a Jewish school that we attended. And it was only a nickel in those days. But I was furious, and I really raved and ranted. I said, who do you think I am that you have to pay my car fare? I have a nickel just like you do. And he was very hurt, because he thought being polite. But even at that age, I felt that I felt very strongly about women's rights. And I've never lost that feeling. I think that the feminist movement today has gone much further than I had ever thought it would. But I think it proceeded.
Do you mean too far?
No, not at all. No, I don't mean that. But I think it has proceeded from where my mother started and where I was at, and it goes on. I think that's the way, you know, progress makes itself felt. And I think also, when you talk about what I got from my mother, I think my mother's generation of women, even if they were conscious, and many of them were, of the inequities of being a woman, took it out in hostility towards men. And their way of coping with it was like getting even, you know? And I would hope that we could get to a point where we would get beyond that, where when there comes a time when we really are, I won't say equal, I don't know if that's a good word, but where we have achieved status as human beings rather than as women, then I think maybe a lot of the hostilities and antagonisms maybe will melt away. And I think in my rearing of my children, I tried to rear my sons as well as my daughters to feel respect for people, looking down at women or looking up at men. And I think even you, Judy, will agree that certainly one of my sons is one of the least sexist men you know. And I think it's because he was raised in a feeling, in an atmosphere where, I guess I wouldn't permit sexist treatment. Let me say this. I wouldn't permit it as far as I was conscious of
yeah.
it. I couldn't
yeah.
not permit it. There were many areas in which I did, naturally, being a product of my time. But certainly being aware of the need for struggle, for equating ourselves, for becoming more human beings and less a second sex, as Simone de Beauvoir said.
I guess, you know, I still think we have a long way to go, and until we get there, it's hard for me not to feel some of that hostility. And I think that the amount that I'm able to give to the struggle comes partly from having grown up in a feminist household. But we still have a long way to go. I wanted to ask you if you felt that there were things that made your life hard that wouldn't be so hard if you were in the same position but a man.
Oh, absolutely. There were many things. To begin with, although, as I said, I wanted children from the time I could remember, becoming a young mother was almost a catastrophe. It was so different. You know, I have a theory that I call the fairy tale syndrome, and particularly women in my day, and probably today too, were brought up on the fairy tale idea. You grew up and you were pretty and you got married and you lived happily ever after. And of course, and you had children too. And then you came home with this little baby who couldn't talk to you, who didn't understand very much, who cried and had to be changed and had to be fed, and you had to change diapers and wash diapers, and if you weren't breastfeeding, you had to make formula. And it was a terrible, terrible letdown. It was such a letdown that all I did was cry with the baby. That was you. It was very sad for you. It was better when the second child came, because I guess I was more reality oriented by that time. But I think that the whole culture is lies to women in particular about what their goal should be and what their dream should be and how it's going to come out and it's going to, you know, be all beautiful. It just, that's not where it's at all. And I think that we really need education in those areas.
I got to say, we're going to have this heavy scene on the air now, right here. Everybody, perk your ears up. You forgot to tell me that stuff. See, because when I had my first kid, I was 18, and it was 18 years after you had your first kid. And when you talk about the culture of lying, I think you had gotten your brainwashed.
Forget. It's like childbirth. You forget it. You
yeah,
really
because,
do.
Boy, and I'm not saying this bitterly, because, well, it may be that you forget. I haven't forgotten, and I don't think I could forget, and it's the same 18 years difference, and I think part of the difference is there's a real, live, heavy feminist movement that's been helping me and supporting me and remembering
that's true because
you know, I had the same thing happen. I went to work when my kid was exactly the same age that I was when you went to work, and I went to work with the same sense of relief, and it wasn't until 10 years later that I forgave myself for that. As it happened, I had financial circumstances that made me have to do it.
Well, but I still haven't forgiven myself. I think I did you a disservice.
I know you do. I have stopped thinking that myself. I think the world did my son a disservice when it when it put me alone in a tiny apartment in Brooklyn, because that was all I could afford, with no friends and no...
It is such a lonely time.
Yeah.
It's just terrible.
Yeah, and I mean, and I have to say this now, also by the time I had my second and third kids, I came to love it. And if there had not been feminism, in fact, I think I too would have forgotten, because it's much easier for me to remember the joy of having Miriam when I wasn't lonely anymore, when I had the other kids, when I also I was older and I had made more friends because I was already,
rooted. You also had a more participating husband by that time.
Yeah, yeah.
That helped too.
All of
that.
It
really does.
But it would be real easy for me too to forget the nightmare of, I mean, I don't know, do you remember the day that I brought Adam home from the hospital?
Yes.
And my husband called you up?
Yes.
And said, Bea, the baby's crying and Judy's crying and I'm sitting here and crying and none of us know what to do.
Yeah.
Well, you came over that day, but there was only so much you could do.
Right.
And then I spent the next 6 months where I never got dressed or combed my hair and had to cut all my long hair off 6 months later because it had got tangled in such a knot from not having combed it. I barely managed to take care of the baby. But that's what did you call it, fairy tale?
The fairy tale syndrome.
That is a time, that first baby is one of the times when reality really hits a woman. But the other thing, is there anything comparable that I don't know about yet that comes later, some reality of being a woman that comes after 37 that you can share?
Well, I think there is. I think when your children begin to grow up and don't need you, I remember Sidoni Grunberg, for instance, who was a person of the Child Study Association, a very brilliant woman, addressing a group of us young mothers when our children were 2 and 3. And she said, motherhood at best is a full-time occupation for, say, 10 years. After that, it's part-time. And she said, if you're walking down the street and your kid's about 11 years old and somebody says, what do you do? And you say, I'm a part-time mother. She said, that isn't really very much of a career or very much of a life to look forward to. And she said, when your kids are little, that's the time to think of what you're going to do with your life when they're growing up and you're grown up. And I think that was a very appropriate statement. Of course, it's a little different today when so many young women are career-oriented. You see, in my early days, we weren't, because it was depression time. And we didn't think of careers. We thought of a way of making a living. And anything you could get a job at was a way of making a living. So you didn't think of what you wanted to be when you grew up. You just thought, oh, can I get a job? Can I get a job for $5, for $10, for $15, for
$21? You're talking about a week, right?
What's that?
You're talking about a week.
Oh, yeah, a week. Yeah. Yeah. Not an hour? Oh, heavens. We were not career-oriented, neither men nor women, by the way. I had a friend who later became a rather well-known lyricist, and he worked in a leather goods place. He made $18 a week, and he didn't think of a career either. Nobody thought of careers because there weren't any available, certainly not to lower middle class people or to working people. Maybe to upper class people, they thought of them then too, but we didn't know anybody like that. So it was a different time, and it was different for men and for women. And careers was something that didn't come into a person's consciousness until much later in the development of, of our time.
Yeah, except that then later on in the 50s, There were careers. My father, for instance, I mean, who you were no longer living with at the time, but I mean, just for the contrast, he was a journalist, and he knew he was a journalist.
Yeah.
And you were...
Well, I had a degree, but no career.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
right.
You were raising kids.
That's right.
And I think
that
hiatus makes it harder to resume a career, too. The phone number here, by the way, is 371-5200. And my mother and I are talking about her age and mine, I guess. It was supposed to be hers. But mine keeps creeping up into it, my time of life and times of life. But we're talking about, trying to talk mostly about being older. And is there anything now that's different about your life now from what it would be, do you think, if you were a man and retired? Well, you couldn't be retired and getting Social Security if you were a man, could you?
Yes, I could. In July, of course. Men can get it now, too, at 62.
Mm-hmm.
They couldn't earlier, but now they can. No, I don't. Well, yes, there is. Of course there is. Because, as I said earlier, women in our culture, again, in the nuclear family, have a built-in trade from the day they become married. I have a house to run. And although my husband is helpful, it's not his primary.
That's the word, help.
Yeah, that's right. I have a lovely... You got a call?
Yeah.
Because I have a nice story. All right, I'll tell it afterwards.
Okay, let's take this. WBAI, you're on the air.
Your mother is talking.
You want to finish that story then? Okay, you sit there and she'll finish.
Okay, the story is not about me, but rather about my daughter and son-in-law. Not this daughter, another one. My son-in-law was vacuuming one day, and as he was vacuuming, he was making up a little song, and he sang, "Aren't I a good husband? I'm vacuuming the house for my wife." And then his wife gave him a look, and he thought for a minute, and he said, "You're right. I am vacuuming our house for us." And that was a kind of consciousness raising, I guess. But it's still true that by and large, in most families, the chores are divided. And so women age 60, 65, 70 have a house to run and shopping to do and cleaning to do and meal preparing and making up menus and all the rest of that stuff, taking the laundry down to the laundromat, whatever. So that we're never unemployed. Never. Not until you're incapacitated. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. What did you want to...
In regard to what your mother said about women in the 30s not wanting careers, nor men either.
Yeah.
That isn't exactly right, because I think I'm about your mother's age, or maybe a little older. But I had many ideas of I wanted to be an artist, a designer, or a journalist. I didn't end up with any of those things because I had to go to work at 17 when I finished high school, and there wasn't any money so that I could go to college. And instead of going to college, I went to Cooper Union at night. However, the jobs in the designing field paid so little, and I already had a job making about $18 a week in an insurance company. So I became a political activist, and in thinking about that time, I realized that many of us who were so active in the things that were going on at that time gave up personal ambitions to participate in these collective actions, and that went for men and women, although many who were also active went ahead and finished their college and so forth. But what happens is that those women who wanted to have a career as well as marriage and children, if that came along, were defeated by the Depression and by other and many other things, of course, too. And I think that was characteristic of many of the women of that period.
Yes, I'll agree with that. I think that people who had great motivation in particular areas did want to have careers, but for the majority of us who hadn't really figured out what we wanted to be when we grew up, I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. If I had it to do over again, I'd have about five more careers, all of which I'm sure I would enjoy. I wanted to be an anthropologist, for instance, and I would have too, except that I had a second child. And that, see, that is the difference. If I'd have been a man, I guess I could have gone on, even if I did have a second, you know, become a father of a second child. But becoming a mother of a second child, that stymied that. And by the time I could have done that, it was sort of late. So I think you're right that there are people who were very strongly motivated, who were frustrated by the times, but many of us who were not, you know, strongly interested in one thing or another, just went along with whatever came along because, again, because of economic factors.
And the knowledge, you know, the knowledge in advance of the probability of that defeat, you know, can help you even, can keep you from thinking of the things in the first place.
Right.
Okay, I'll say goodbye.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
I had found one more piece of music about being older, and if it's the one that I think it is, this is Joan Baez.
An apartment in the city. Me and Loretta like living there. It's been years since the kids have grown, lives of their own, left us alone. John and Linda live in Omaha. Joey's somewhere on the road. We lost Davy in the Korean War. Still don't know what for. Don't matter anymore. You know,
that was Joan Baez singing Hello in There from the Diamonds and Rust album. This is Judy Pasternak, and my mother and I are talking about being older. And the phone number here is 371-5200. We're talking about being older, by the way, and we're talking about being women. I don't think I said that the last time I said what we were talking about. This program is coming to you from the WBAI Women's Department, which has some interesting new programming, including Women's Magazine on Sunday. This Sunday at 1 o'clock, we will be celebrating Mother's Day, more or less. WBAI, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. I really called to say thank you very much for not only a marvelous program, but for doing it at this particular time. How often I find myself in the kitchen washing vegetables or beginning to prepare a meal at this particular time, and there's nothing that I can use my head on while I'm while I'm doing that, and sometimes I don't have, I really want to hear just exactly this kind of program. So thank you very much.
Thank you. That was the general idea.
Great.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
WBAI, you're on the air.
Oh, hello, Judy?
Hi. Yeah.
Oh, I haven't spoken to you since Women's Day. It's so good to hear your voice again.
Thank you. Hi.
I was just thinking, you know, a lot of programming and things that I hear in the women's movement are about women that have been married and had children. But there's also a problem that happens as you're getting older when you've never had children or been married. And mm-hmm. it's a whole other kind of awareness and a whole other... there are a lot of similar problems, I'm sure, with all women, but I think there's a little bit of a different.
Yeah. Like what?
Well, I find that when I compare myself, this is not going to be a very popular statement, but I think you have to become stronger when you do a lot of things on your own.
Hmm? Yeah. I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I find that as I get stronger and stronger, there's... I rely on myself more, and that it's harder to share with another person in a one-to-one relationship, especially when you get into be in your 30s, and you know you've lived alone for a long time.
I find that a conflict myself, by the way, an ongoing one.
Yes, and in order to survive with what you have to cope with, you have to use so much strength. You know, that it becomes a way of life. And I find, especially if you would have to be put in a dating situation where you've got to rely on someone else, I just can't cope with that anymore.
Well, I'd like to say something at this point, if I may. I think that from the minute you're born until the very last minute, really, you're your own best friend and best company. And I think that it's important to develop strength of, I guess, liking yourself and enjoying being with yourself, because push or shove, that's the way it is. And I think I've been fortunate in a way in having a husband who encouraged me to preserve my own identity and my own independence. That was his need, it so happened, but it worked out very fortuitously. And for instance, I have traveled by myself quite a lot, and people would always say, "You went all by yourself?" And I would say, "Why not? I enjoy being by myself. I love..." One of my greatest thrills was being on the 20th century, going to Chicago in a little roomette all by myself. I could talk to myself and answer myself, and nobody argued with me, and nobody said no to me. And it's I think that that's a quality which we all need to develop, whether we're men or women or old or young. Leaning on yourself and you know, liking to be with yourself and enjoying the things that you do as a person by yourself, that's terribly important. Otherwise, I think you become... I've seen so many, for instance, symbiotic marriages, which are really very unhealthy for both people and are terrible crushers if one or the other goes, because the other person can't exist anymore. So I think, you know, whatever age you are and whatever sex you are, you need to develop this feeling of independence and relating to yourself.
Mm-hmm. I still think that my mother is an extraordinary woman.
Yes, well, she sounds wonderful.
Well,
I don't know.
I try.
I don't know if I would go that far, but extraordinary. Unusual.
Bye.
Thank you for calling. Bye-bye. WBAI, you're on the air.
I have a question to the lady who's talking.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead. I think you have to turn down your radio, probably. It may be, because if your radio's on, you'll be getting feedback.
Okay. All right. I'm going to address myself to your mother, because we happen to be in the same general area of work when we worked. I'm imminently leaving a directorship of a daycare center.
Oh.
And, you know, daycare centers don't have you leave. There's no retirement age.
Really?
And I never looked forward to retirement as a way of life. That never was in my mind, but she's absolutely right. You do get very much to the point where you can't work anymore. And it's a heavy job, a daycare center director has a big load to carry.
Yes, it is.
And
yes,
so, is. Here I am, and the problem that I have with retiring isn't that I might be a little worried about my financial situation. Other than that, I worry mostly about leaving a field that was a labor of love for me. And how do you make the break? It can't be that complete.
No, I don't think it should be.
You need to continue to work a little bit.
Well, I haven't, but what I do is I visit some of the people that I knew in the field. I go back to a school where I was director. In fact, I'll probably spend a day there next week visiting with the teachers and the children. I may even do a music thing with some of the classes, because that used to be my big thing. And I think... Actually, that's about all that I really need to keep my hand in, because I felt that I, you know, gave it a really good whirl, and I didn't feel reluctant to leave. I think that one is always ambivalent. There are feelings of, this has been so great, and I loved it, and it was such a big part of my life. How am I going to do without it? But it's amazing how you do find that there are other things that you've been postponing all your life because you didn't have time for them.
I know that, and I will have absolutely no lag in terms of keeping busy, and I'm not even going to have to work at it.
No.
That isn't the problem. The problem is that I feel that I have sufficient energies left to give a lot to this field. And, you know, that I could even maybe work part-time. But there is no such thing. You either have to work
right,
someday or you...
Right.
It's almost a foregone conclusion that they need you for full-time.
Yes. Well, I think that if you really wanted to do something like that, it was one of the things I had in mind and haven't gotten to yet. There's certainly no dearth of schools that would love for you to come in even a couple of hours a week or a day or whatever, and help in whatever way you can, certainly with your expertise or...
You mean to volunteer?
Right, right. I don't think that you can do that on a paid basis anymore.
Oh.
But if you, you know, really do want to keep your hand in, that's a great way to do it.
Yeah, I won't have any problems being invited.
No, I don't think you would.
I really won't, but the thing is that, you know, that isn't, you know, there's a tremendous amount of work to be done in this field.
Oh, of course. And, of course, you could always keep up with the Early Childhood Education Council. They're always asking for people to work with them.
Again, volunteer.
I'm a long-standing member in that organization. I don't know how you mean that. You know, there's not much... mean to go out into centers and work?
Well, no. The organization itself could use your help. I don't have the number with me, but if you've been a member, you know of the office, and they always need help in many aspects, in organizing meetings, in being participating in the activities. They're always having something going on. I know that I have been remiss in that. They have been after me for a long time. But certainly they would welcome any help you can give.
I think, you know, it's something that I consider is more than my problem. I imagine that any person,
right.
Many of us have been in this field for a long time.
Yes.
A lot of the best part of our lives do it, because you work long days and you really...
Sure.
You build up, you learn as much as you give, I guess.
Oh, yes.
Do,
oh, yes.
Or maybe. But then on the other hand... I don't see I don't think I'm speaking just for myself. I don't think I'm unique in the sense that I'm the only one who's bothered by working in a field, and in some cases you must retire, and then being left hanging at loose ends, feeling, there's still so much I could do. I can't do it full time, like maybe 8 to 9 hours a day,
yeah.
But I can do it. I can do a lot. And it's as though you the only avenue you have is to go and volunteer your services. And
yes.
And again,
I think that's true. I think that is the only
problem. It's a problem. I know another person who feels similarly. People will be leaving because they're getting to that age. You know, people started working early on in the late 1930s and 40s, and they're now going to be retiring, a lot of them.
Yes.
I think
yes.
A lot of them feel that way.
Well, I do know that before I left my job, there were people in the organization who had already quit working but who were still active in it. And I think they have, you know, you have your expertise and your experience to contribute to the younger people who, you know, have can learn from us.
And, you know, the fact is that you can always go and you can always volunteer. I know that. I could walk right back into the mm-hmm. center that I opened, and they would gladly have me there. But that isn't the point. The point is that in most cases where you're into, if you're working, you're working. If you come in as a volunteer, you're really sort of like an outsider. You're doing it for your own satisfaction, not for them, I think. That's the way they feel about
there's
it.
There's a whole problem about volunteer work, which I, you know, I don't know if you know what has been happening at this radio station.
Yes, I do.
But, okay, because, you know, I'm listening and I'm thinking that I would have felt that way, I think, before I came here.
I guess your mother must know that, for instance, the Early Childhood Education Council or any organization that one might be in, when they organize something and they want people on a regular basis to go out and do things, they're going to go and get people who are to
in
be
the
paid.
School. Yeah.
They're not going to look for volunteers because the experts don't work for free. The ones that are today and working today, you know, they're not going to work for free because their time is what they have to be paid for their time.
I think you might try. I think there is something in our own attitude towards volunteer work. If we feel that we're really contributing something, then I think we'll get something out of it. I think it goes back to the whole ethic of work. Is it only valuable if you get money for it, or is it valuable because it does something for you or for humanity or for people? And I think that's another big thing, and maybe would take a whole other time to talk about.
Yeah, but I also want to say again that this place, WBAI, is probably one of the few places in the world that doesn't, and especially now, we have a union contract that recognizes all of us as equal, but it doesn't distinguish that way between paid staff and volunteer. And I think that in the places that you're talking about, that there probably is a problem of political organization, and that it probably is something that it sounds like something that the Grey Panthers would be interested in if they're not already, that whole concept of work, because it seems clear that a lot of people retire when there seems to be that no middle ground there.
That's right.
Except volunteer
That's right.
work. And I should think it's something that a group, an organized group of older people, should be addressing themselves to, is the issue of either volunteer work and or part-time work,
mm-hmm.
but trying to create structures
so
that people can make meaningful work for themselves that isn't...
I also think I agree with your mother wholeheartedly that, you know, to the extent that you can have an independent life and that you can go out and get busy, there are many, many ways to do that, and you don't even have to look. But the idea is that, you know, there are a lot of things that you can do that maybe I could go back and learn to sew again. Lay out a pattern and sew my clothes. I can keep busy doing that full time right now. But then the point is that a person needs more than that. And I agree with the people who feel that, you know, well, I can do a lot of things and I can keep busy and that's okay, but I need people. And I need people. I can't just live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have friends and all of that, but there are many senior citizens who find themselves locked off because they never had that kind of opportunity or whatever, or they never thought it important enough when they were busy with children and family and all. And then all of a sudden they're left all alone, and that is, it is a very serious problem.
Yes, it is.
When you're out and working, you're with people. If you work in a daycare center and it's a serious job, you're with young staff and you're with parents and you're with a board and you're with an organization that is political in character and you have to become part of the politics of that organization. When you leave all that behind, and if there's nothing to take its place on the outside,
yeah,
it has to be a very serious problem.
Yeah. I want to...
Very much for listening, and it's been wonderful listening to the program.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you for calling. I want to, before we... Oh, no, I still have... I thought I had misplaced the address and phone number of the Grey Panthers, which I would like to say one more time, because I think that they do some things that are relevant to some of what we've talked about. That's... They're at 609 Columbus Avenue at 90th Street. The phone number is 877-8334, and a listener called to say that they have meetings most Wednesdays at 4:30 at the Ethical Culture Building at 2 West 64th Street, and I suppose you'd have to call them to find out what most Wednesdays mean. We have a few minutes left, and I just wanted to know if you had any last things to say about... Well, I guess I would really like to know how you see the next, how far ahead you see your life now, how far ahead you feel you can look now, and how you see that being, and what you see coming.
Well, I don't know if that would end it on a good note, because let's face it, you know, as you get older, I don't even want to say it, there's only one way to go, and that's down. So I don't think that would be a good thing to talk about. I think the thing to stress is that every day is the day you have, and that's the day to make the most of. And no, I don't want to think about or even talk about what's going to happen when I, you know, can't get around or do have to sit in a chair. I have an aunt who's 82 years old and she still gets around real well, and an uncle who's 86 and he gets around real well.
Yeah.
And I think the way to do that is to think about, it's like Omar Khayyam said, you know, tomorrow I may be myself with yesterday's 10,000 years, but today is the day, and that's where we're at. And I think that's where the concentration has to be, for productive living, for a healthy attitude towards life and all the good and bad and mixed up things there are in it. That's the way I'd like to leave it at this point in time, as as somebody we know used to say.
One day at a time. Somebody you did not listen to on television.
No, I don't admire, but I think that, you know, it's a useful phrase.
So. I guess I can't either imagine beyond this immediate period. I think really we never can either. I think one of the things I've learned in very recently is not to try and figure out what it's going to be like past this part of my life, because I've finally learned, it took a long time, that with the changes that I can see, there'll be some that I can't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah,
but
and I think that sometimes that can be very defeatist. My father reminded me just the other day that when he was 17, he tried to commit suicide because he saw no point to life. And I said, I'm so glad you didn't, because where would I be, and where would my kids be, and where would your 8 great-grandchildren be? And he allowed us how that was so. And at this point in his life, he really wants to go on and see what the next day will bring. I think that's much healthier.
How old is he?
he's going to be 90 in September. He's moving it up to July 15th because I think he wants to say he's 90. I think that's real important to him. So he's going to take my birthday for his.
Are you going to keep it too? Are we celebrating a double birthday?
I don't know. If it makes him happy, we might as well. I think 2 months when you're 90 isn't really anything to talk about. There have been so many months. And this is a man who's paralyzed and only has partial vision and still sees some point to life. And maybe that's where I got my general feeling. I don't always feel this way. There are days when I'm down, too. I think we all have those. I think it would be ridiculous to be a Pollyanna and say every day is great and marvelous and lovely and just what I've always wanted. But I think that it's the variation in the days, the grays as well as the pinks and the blues that make it interesting and exciting and something to look forward to.
Okay, I want to thank you a lot for being here. I have had a real good time. This is Judy Pasternak. I've been talking today with my mother, and I'm going to be back next Tuesday at 3 o'clock. Other women's department programming this week. Let's see, Irene Yarrow is on tonight at 9 o'clock. The women's department, the women's magazine, The Velvet Sledgehammer, will be on Sunday at 1 o'clock. And on Monday at 9, it's Jerry Hatch with Our City, Our Lives. And on Tuesday, the lesbian radio program with Carmen Garcia and Rebecca Tron. And on Wednesday, Viv Sutherland's Women's Studies. And also, as I said, on Tuesday, me, Judy Pasternak. And for no matter what the subject of the program has been, always, when I close with this song because it applies to absolutely everything.
Every season has their home.